The Download with Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN. I'm Matt Bubala filling in tonight. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Hope you're having a great evening. Lots of people crowding into downtown, getting ready to head over to Navy Pier for the fireworks. As Don was saying, sounds like security is going to be a bit tight. You want to get there early to get through the wanding and everything else that's going to go on.
Yeah, and I guess they're going to close it after it reaches capacity, and then you can watch it.
Probably a good idea.
There,
yeah, you absolutely. You could watch right down here on Pioneer Court if you wanted to. I think you could see them pretty well. I have seen rolling up and down Michigan Avenue a few different times undercover police cars with several officers in them. Mm-hmm. The crowds have been thick here on Michigan Avenue. A lot of people seem to be coming downtown tonight. Hopefully the rain is going to hold off and you'll get some good fireworks. After 9 o'clock, after the 9 o'clock news, we'll play some patriotic music, have some words of wisdom from our founding fathers and other leaders throughout our great American history to be a little soundtrack for you as you see your local fireworks or come down here. Actually, down here, they're not going to start till after 9:30, right?
That's right. And Navy Pier is 9:30. I think Evanston also is 9:30. But some communities will call it, you know, after dark, 9:15-ish.
Yeah, probably 9:10, 9:15. So hopefully we'll sync up with yours. So keep us on at 7:20 here all night long. Joining us on the phone right now from CNN Money, the senior writer and editor, is Heather Long. She jumps on the phone. Hey, Heather, how are you tonight?
Hi, Matt. I'm in New York, and we had a lot of helicopters flying around as we prepare for the fireworks here. So.
You have fireworks flying around, or helicopters flying around as part of, like, a security
thing? That's what it looks like. Either that or somebody important is trying to land before the fireworks. I guess we'll find out soon.
Are the big fireworks in New York City in Central Park? Or are they along the river somewhere?
Yeah, they go out up over the river, the Hudson River. So that's where the big Macy's fireworks display will be. Sounds like you've got a great one in Chicago, too.
Yeah, we do. It's so funny. So Macy's runs the fireworks. They get Thanksgiving. They get the 4th of July. What are they? They're owning all the holidays in New York, huh?
I know. You wouldn't know that their stock's in trouble lately. They've got money for fun.
Well, it's good marketing, I'm sure, for them, even if it's not working right now. But
let's
talk about the economy for a minute. There was a story out this week that Moody's Analytics did a study on Donald Trump's economic policies. Now, let's take this with a grain of salt, because so far Donald has said a bunch of things that he's going to do, right? And we all know that when you're running for office, you say a bunch of things you're going to do, half of which you'll never, ever get a chance to do, because it's not like you become dictator and get to do whatever you want, right? But he's proposing different tax cuts, building a wall, tariffs, all these different things. So Moody's took some of that and plugged it into their model for the U.S. economy. His key economic policies that we know of so far, they say tax cuts skewed heavily to the 1%, mass deportation of illegal immigrants, and huge tariffs on imports from China and Mexico. If he did this during his first 2 years as president, Moody's Analytics says things would really go south quickly. So how much, as a money person, how much credence do you put into a study like this far out of the actual election?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Moody's Analytics is a very good outfit. They actually have a presidential election prediction model, kind of like 538 and other polling services, and it's been very accurate. So since 1980, they have correctly forecasted the winning party of the election. So, you know, they do have a pretty good track record overall, particularly around political issues. But I think the reality is they were the first group that's really trying to quantify how many job losses would happen if Trump they're supposed to do a similar analysis of Clinton's policy soon. So they came out and said this very specific number of 3.5 million job losses. And yeah, I think you got to take something like that with a huge grain of salt, like any predictive model. It's kind of like predicting the weather. You know, you're using the best guesses and the best tools that you've got, but it's a pretty big spectrum of what the possible outcomes could be. And they admit that. They actually ran three different scenarios, kind of going along what you were saying. They said, look, here's our first scenario. If Trump does everything he says, kind of that dictator approach, then it's going to be very ugly. We predict 3.5 million job losses. We predict a recession that would be longer than the Great Recession, so a very long recession. And, you know, in the stock market would tank. Then they have sort of a Trump light. So let's say he gets a few policies across, but not all of them. So then in that case, they predict, you know, fewer job losses, although there would still be a recession. So it would still be a difficult period for the economy. And then they say just what you said. They said, look, a lot of presidents get there and they face a Congress that's very antagonistic, particularly in the last decade. And so it's quite likely that Trump would really be tamed down, Trump super light. And if that were to happen, they do not predict a recession, although they do, you know, think it would be some harm to the economy.
What's your guess on Hillary Clinton? They're going to do the same thing you said for Hillary Clinton and her policies. But I imagine it's a continuation of the current policies somewhat. Probably wouldn't be that much different, right?
Yeah, you know, Clinton's been interesting. So her probably best economic idea that she doesn't get enough attention is that she wants to do a lot of infrastructure spending. So I don't know about Chicago, but I'm sure we can all point to roads and bridges.
It's all we do here.
Yeah, not to mention IT infrastructure and Wi-Fi and stuff like that, that could be a heck of a lot better in this country. And so she wants to do a big spending program around that as she gets in. And a lot of people think that will help to jumpstart the economy. Now, whether that's enough to really get it going, we've sort of been in this, I like to call the B plus economy. We've been kind of good, but not great in this recovery. So that's still a big question mark. So it'll be interesting to see if Moody's actually predicts that she would create more jobs through her tax and spending plans.
Well, I guess the question is, Heather, how much does any of this affect actual voting? I know that's not your realm, but as we've gotten to this point so far, Donald Trump has said before, I can say just about anything and people are going to vote for me. The crowd he's drawing so far doesn't seem to care what the media says about his policy. He is so good at spinning whatever comes out. If you're going to say something negative about him, he'll point at you and say, well, the media, look at they're trying to do this or that. So he'll be able to spin any of this. How much do voters generally take into account actual research on the economy as they're going into an election? It seems more that if we're voting on the economy, we're voting with the current state of the economy. And is it good for me right now? If the answer is yes,
exactly,
Let's stick with the same. If the answer is no, we need a change.
Exactly. Now, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of how voters actually look at the economy. I will say I was back in Pennsylvania, which is my home state. It's a big swing state, setting up PA and Ohio there for the weekend and the long holiday weekend. It, you know, it's really interesting just listening to people and their assessment of Trump in that part of the country. And I think what surprises a lot of people in, say, elite areas and the Mitt Romneys of the world is why these trade policies, this very protectionist attitude that Trump keeps talking about, whether it's wanting to put up those physical barriers of the wall or wanting to really sock it to China or Mexico with big taxes and tariffs on goods coming into the country from those parts of the world. And, you know, I think a lot of politicians, including in Republican business circles, have really been taken aback by how this is resonating so much, this anti-globalization backlash. And, you know, I was surprised. The message when I was speaking to people over the weekend, some said, look, I know that if Trump did what he said and put these tariffs on, I know that it would cost me more when I go to the store. They understood that part of the research and that part of the economic modeling. They said, I don't know if it'll cost me a couple hundred, you know, maybe one research group said 2,000 for the average family if everything Trump said went to pass. But they also looked around and said, I'm not sure that's such a bad thing. I wonder if I'd be willing to pay more if that more things were made in America. And that's something I think people are underestimating, that message seems to be resonating even when people understand the negative consequences.
How do you think the Brexit vote is going to affect our politics here and our vote as we go into the election? I know it's a little too early to tell what's really going to happen in the next 6 months because it's a 2-year unwinding, it looks like, and the markets have already seemingly recovered quite a bit from the sudden fallout when they voted to leave. What do you see happening in the next 6 months, and do you think it will affect our election?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. We've been debating that at CNN. I'll give you my take, and that is I actually don't think that this bodes that well for the Trump camp. I know he jumped right on it and then had that statement in Scotland, you know,
yes,
Britain first, America next. But, okay, sure, the U.S. markets have bounced back all right from this, as expected. There wasn't supposed to be a huge headwind for the United States. Britain's a very small trading partner in the grand scheme of things. But you got to remember, this looks very ugly in Britain. They are definitely going, almost certainly going to be in a recession by the end of the year. They still, it looks like many big businesses are literally thinking of pulling thousands of employees out and moving them to Europe because London used to be the headquarters of banks and other large companies, and they want to move back to be in Europe. And so, this protectionist attitude it looks like it's going to backfire, and you can see that, right? What are the headlines a few days later? It's the regrexit. It's the regret now, for even from people who voted that. And so, I'm not sure if I'm sitting here in the United States thinking, is this a good idea? I think in the next few months, from the economic situation, it is not going to look like a good idea, at least in the short term.
And then, there was a lot of talk in the week after about this petition to have another vote. Is that going to gain enough steam to actually happen? I know that leaders of the country said, listen, we can't do this over and over again. People voted to leave. This is what we have to do. But and they don't technically have to do it, right? The leaders, they have to enact this clause. And if they don't actually do that, and they actually don't actually, are they bound to have to do it? Or could a leader say, you know what, this is not in the best interest of the country. We're not going to do it after all.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a lot of gray areas. People reread various parts of Act 50 of the EU, whatever you want to call it, constitution document. So basically, it looks like they will not have a revote, at least not in the next few months. That looks pretty out of the question. You're right. I think what's more likely to play out is there's no set timeline for how this plays out. And so what you see is you see the EU leaders from Germany and France saying, fine, you want out, you get out right away. But, of course, they have no authority to kick them out right away. And Britain actually has to come, the leaders of Britain, and petition to leave now. So the vote doesn't just say, okay, we're done, we're out now. There's like this formal, as you were saying, two-year-long process. And the real question is, when does that clock even begin? When does the official petition, basically like our Declaration of Independence back in the day, when does that formal document land in Brussels at the EU headquarters? And I think Britain will stall for a long time on that. It's in their best interest to go slow, to try to calm things down, to try to work things out before they get to that bargaining table. And meanwhile, you're going to see Europe try to play hardball and say, wait a minute, you can already see this kind of coalescing in Europe around trying to say Europe's still a good thing because they don't want other countries to leave. So they're trying to play hardball, look strong.
Absolutely. And it's a tough situation because Britain now, the leaders who didn't want to leave, seeing how tough this could be or how bad this could be for their economy, they want to slow it down, take their time, because if they exit, they want to do it in as calm an economy as possible, right? And hopefully it works well for Britain. But that would be to the detriment of the entire EU, because if it works out well for Britain, they come out of this and they're looking good, then all these other countries are going, what the hell are we in this thing for if that worked out that well for them? So it's really in the best interest of the EU, is it not, to make this as painful as possible for Britain, so everybody else says, this is why we're sticking together. We don't want to, people in any of the other members going, hey, let's do this. Look at how well this worked for Britain.
Yep, you're spot on. And that's why the two key industries that have been hurt the most in the stock market and have seen the biggest turmoil are really the airlines and banking. Because right now, London is a huge hub. Probably some of your listeners, maybe you have flown through London on your way to various parts of the world. And there's a big debate now about whether British airlines are going to have the same rights to European airspace that they had before Brexit. And similarly, in the banking channels, they had simultaneous, like being in the same country. And as we all know, if you ever sent money abroad, there's some really nasty fees for doing that.
Yeah.
And so, they're thinking long and hard about whether they want to continue to integrate London into the European banking system. So these are big questions, and they can have very nasty ramifications.
So theoretically, when they exit Brexit and they exit the EU and it's all finished, British Airways could be charged tariffs for landing in France and other places that they're all just equal and agreed upon now. Now the EU could say, well, you're not part of us, so there's this, they'll be more like America to them than what they are
basically,
now.
Basically, yes. Yeah, that's effectively what would happen.
Economically,
again, this is a long way off, and
sure,
they have a lot more negotiating to do.
Yeah.
But
economically, is there a benefit? I'm guessing, and from what I've read, the big push on this, the emotional push was, hey, foreigners are moving in here too easily. We have issues. We have issues with terrorism. Britain isn't Britain anymore. Yada, yada, yada. You play on people like that with, and I'm guessing a lot of it is Muslims moving into our country and our foreign population. That's, it's too easy to move here. We need to protect our borders. Was that the big sell? And is there anything economically positive that could come out of this for Britain?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say two things. Number one, I think the other point that certainly with CNN, we actually had one of my colleagues rented a caravan, a camper, and drove around Britain talking to people on air. It was a great series. We all loved it. And, you know, what you hear most, and then you could see it in some polling. I was reading one of the conservatives, Lord Ashcroft, I think, did some polling after the vote. And what was fascinating is sovereignty was the number one issue. So, yes, there was some concern about immigration. That was definitely part of it. But it was really the problem with Britain being in the EU, from many people's perspective, was the notion that the EU court would somehow could potentially be higher than British courts in certain instances, almost like a Supreme Court. And this sort of they didn't like the notion that decisions could be made in Brussels and not in Britain. So it was really this kind of weird sovereignty authority question that was bigger in a lot of people's minds than the immigration. Mm. Which is interesting. The other good point to make on immigration that one of my colleagues wrote a lot about is, yes, there's been a lot of immigration, particularly from Eastern Europe, but it's interesting that more immigrants in the past few years to the UK have come from outside of Europe than inside of Europe. And so you're right. Is that going to change? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, again, the only thing we're renegotiating here is European transit and European immigration. So it's unclear what would happen with, say, people coming from the Middle East or coming from North Africa, let alone coming from the United States or other places.
Is there a positive economic impact? Can somebody say, yeah, but here's what's going to happen. This is going to be great for us. You're going to love this.
Yes. Well, I used to live in London, actually, and so one of my former neighbors, who's 70, and I did vote for Brexit, probably summed it up best. She sent me an email the morning of Brexit, and she said, you know, all of this doom and gloom was prophesized in 1992, and that was the big vote that Britain took to sort of get themselves out of the euro, so out of the currency. Britain's
right.
Never been part of the euro, and that was the first step to exit what would eventually become the euro. And, you know, all that doom and gloom was predicted, and it didn't come to pass. So that there's definitely a feeling of, okay, it's going to be a rough year, maybe a rough 2 years, but that this is still a very prominent economy, world's fifth or sixth, depending on how you look at it, and that they will still play a role and can come out of this okay in the long term. The question is, how battered do they get before they get to that stage?
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be pretty rough. You saw the head of the their equivalent of the head of the Treasury came out at the end of last week and said, "Yep, taxes are probably going to go up and government spending is going to go down," and that's not a pretty situation in any country.
And there's a bit of a leadership vacuum, right? Because the guy who pushed for Brexit said, "I'm not going to become the prime minister." So who's going to take over the reins there? Is that another big question that's going to hurt them?
Definitely. I mean, it's kind of the same question that we face in the United States. So anytime there's uncertainty, there's some great studies in the United States, like any election year, business spending actually goes down. It's been a repeated pattern over many election cycles. And, Britain doesn't have they call elections at different times.
Yeah.
So they don't even have the kind of knowledge of knowing when these are coming. And you're right. They're at a bit of a crisis moment here. And so again, another bad factor for business in Britain.
Well, I feel like at least here we know who's going to lead. We know one of two people, whether you like them at all or not. And you don't like the choices at all. But at least there's a certainty of we know what's coming in some way, shape or form. But there right now, it seems like, OK, who's going to step forward and really take the reins here? And I imagine that's a scary thought, that people vote to do this. The guy that was against it says, OK, I'll resign. Somebody else should lead this. Now nobody's stepping forward and saying, yes, now let's go and do this.
Right, let alone what the plan is. I think you're right. You know, we can at least sit here. I know we were sort of saying, oh, well, Trump sort of says one thing and may mean another. But at the end of the day, at least there's somewhat of a plan to analyze. So, yes, Britain probably is a little envious in that regard.
I imagine. Heather Long is a CNN Money senior writer and editor. Can we follow you online or anywhere, Heather?
That's right. Yep. It's at By Heather Long on Twitter.
At By Heather Long on Twitter. Excellent. And CNNmoney.com, right?
You got it.
All right, Heather. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a great 4th. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone tonight.
Yep. Happy Independence Day.
We'll talk again. Yes. Happy Independence Day, everybody. I guess at least we're not Britain. Can we say that? I don't know. I don't think things aren't that bad yet. We'll see where they go. 720 WGN.